Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Apple made a lot of money. So
charts.
money. We did a live stream. If people want to go on the website, they can see the live stream where we talked about charts. It's like a little presentation of charts in live stream form. Something like that. Yeah,
sure. For the chart enthusiasts among us.
I wrote a piece for Macworld that went up this morning that's about, I think, the most interesting thing in the results, which is that they wouldn't even give people a... Because it's all about the future, right? And they don't do forecasts anymore for the next quarter because of COVID. They stopped doing that. But they didn't even give a ballpark. They used to kind of... They've given ballpark figures before. All they would do is say that between $4 to $8 billion of sales won't happen because of supply chain constraints. And I think next quarter is going to be a tough one, relatively speaking, for Apple. I think it is. I think that's why they're not talking about it, is that maybe it's just that the variance between the 4 and the 8 is too great. But like, they're not, they usually follow it up with a, but we expect to do in this range or do record or whatever. And like, they didn't really want to talk about that.
Right. Yeah. I like you said, they've tended to sandbag in the past because they give very conservative guidance, and people cottoned on to that, especially the financial analysts. After a while, they're like, all right, we know when they say this, they're actually meaning they're probably going to, you know, that's the amount they feel confident that they will make with no problems, and they will probably exceed that. But yeah, this is an interesting situation because so much unpredictability and volatility is in the market right now in terms of all the silicon chip shortages, COVID stuff, all, you know, inflationary environment. Like, there's a lot happening right now, and it's sort of combining to put a bit of a ding in Apple's bottom line, which is, you know, again, not to say they won't make boatloads of money, but this is Wall Street, where all they really care about is you keep making more than you made before, right?
That's right. Up, up, up. Chart goes up.
Yep.
So yeah, I think, I mean, you could hear, because they said between 4 and 8 billion. It's like the most and more than this one. And it's because it's not just the silicon shortages in the supply chain, but it's the it's COVID related. It's the shutdown of factories in China that they're going to have to ramp back up. All of that is the case. And so they say $4 to $8 billion. And you could just tell all the analysts were like, excuse me, what? And they kept asking questions about the 4 to 8, and you know, it's a thing. And it's funny because in the big picture, I was looking at CNBC, as I do only for the half hour before Apple's results come out. That's the only time I ever watch CNBC. But what's fascinating about it is it's been kind of a rough day and week and an era for tech stocks especially, and everybody's sort of looking at Apple like, well, can Apple make us feel better? And Apple's results came out, and you could see the relief on the faces of the analysts on CNBC. They're like, oh, better. And there's some truth in that Apple's kind of like a blue chipper. It's kind of the rock of the tech industry in some ways, and that's good. But like, even Apple is like, yeah, we're gonna kind of take it on the chin. I mean, can you imagine just saying, well, there's $8 billion we didn't make this 3 month period.
It's also the volatility inherent in even that forecast, right? Because you think 4 to 8, okay, that's not that big. But then you think 4 to 8 billion, and you're like, that's actually a lot. There's a lot of swing in there, right? Yeah, the 4 billion versus 8 billion. I mean, they're both not great, but 4 billion is very different. So they just don't know.
Q3 is often Apple's lowest quarter of the year.
Right,
not always, but often. Q3 last year was $81.4 billion in revenue. Well, you know, 81 is a great number, and 73 is less great, right? Like, that's if you deflated that quarter by 8 billion, it's a lot.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it is hard to kind of imagine exactly what that means, right? Because it is, it's still just a tremendous amount of money.
But you could end up in a situation where they are down, revenue goes down 8% when it would have been up, you know, 2%.
Right. And it's important, I think, and you can correct me if I'm reading this wrong, but they're expecting constraints that are in the range of $4 to $8 billion, which also doesn't say that they're $4 to $8 billion down from last year.
No,
it means
they're making
$4 to $8 billion less than what they would have made otherwise, which still might be up.
Right. My guess is that, so you look at a quarter like that and it's 81, and they're thinking, well, we're gonna do 86.
Right.
But
normally
we should do 86. Yeah. Yes, exactly. But now we think internally, they might say, now we think we're going to do between 78 and 82.
Right.
Which means that on the high side of that, they might actually show a little bit of growth. But on the low side of that, they're down.
It might be bad. Yeah. So there's a lot of questions. Yeah. You know, that could mean a lot of different things.
It could. I just think it's telling that they didn't forecast. Like in the past, they've been like, yeah, it's still going to be a record quarter. The last holiday quarter, they said, warning, we're not going to be able to sell as many, but it'll still be a record. And they didn't say that this time. I think the truth is that the encouraging thing, and this is why this is not a big thing, I just think it's interesting that they're not reassuring anybody right now, is, you know, this is all about supply. It's not about demand. Yeah. Apple's basically saying demand for our products is spectacular. However, supply. And then when they asked them, like, the deferral question, they asked Tim Cook, like, are these sales that you lose? Or are these sales that get deferred? And he's like, you know, it's a little bit of both. He said, like, if somebody needs a product right now and they can't get it, they're going to buy something else. But they, you know, I'm sure Apple hopes that because their products are kind of a unique proposition, that a lot of it gets deferred. But that's the other part of it, is like, you know, if half your Macs that you sell are to people who haven't bought a Mac before, well, if that person can't get the Mac, they just won't buy the Mac and they'll go buy a PC instead because they need a computer right now. And they've lost a sale and they've lost somebody in their ecosystem. So it is the flip side is everybody is having these problems. It's not
Apple. If it weren't an industry-wide thing, I think it would be more of a concern. But because it's supply, and supply basically affects all of the industry, albeit unevenly because it depends on things like scale and what pieces you're using. But it is an environment in which everybody is struggling with some factors that are common, such as the pandemic, right? It may, again, hit unevenly as some people's factories get shut down or what have you, but everybody's kind of dealing with the same base level challenges. Inflation's another good example, right? Everybody's dealing with the fact that the US dollar is where it is right now. And that is a challenge for a lot of them, regardless of whether you're buying or selling. I feel like there's a lot of business done in the US dollar, and that's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. So all of this stuff's going to hit people differently. Apple gets slammed in some ways because its scale is so large, right? Like, it is producing huge numbers of products in many cases, and it's doing it with a variety of parts and a variety of partners and all of that stuff. It has a very big operation, and it means there's more surface area for it to get hit by these things.
It turns out legacy nodes. I feel like Tim is now doing one of those, as you know, legacy nodes kind of things, where he's like, I've educated you about it. You all know about it. He said, you know, legacy the last nodes. Quarter, it was driven by industry-wide silicon shortages, specifically the issue I've talked about on previous calls with the legacy nodes. But, you know, for this in particular, he said, like, these constraints are primarily centered around the Shanghai corridor. Almost all the affected final assembly factories have now restarted. The 4 to 8 range reflects various ramps of getting back up and running. So the idea there is that this has already happened. Like, nobody knows what will happen in the future, but what he's saying is this has already happened. That they have a bunch of assembly factories in the Shanghai corridor in Shenzhen, and final assembly of products. So they've got to the point where it's final assembly, and those shut down and are now cranking back up. And so 4 to 8 really does reflect, like, if there aren't more shutdowns. So there's that part of it too, right?
Sure, right. But it can always get worse, Jason.
Yeah, I guess so. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you've got one of those products that somebody mentioned on the call, they're like, if I'm looking for a laptop and I don't have it until June, you know, I can't get it until June. And I was like, well, that sounds very personal. Where's my laptop, Tim?
Tim, like, can I send you a tracking number?
Kyle McNeely from Jefferies. He said, we're noticing the lead times are longer for Macs now. Mindy not shipping until June. Where is my Mac now, Tim? Says Kyle McNeely. Where is it?
Earlier this week, I was talking on the Rebound about how I had this moment of thinking, should I order a Apple Studio display? And my rationale was, I really want an Apple Silicon desktop. I'm hoping that there's like a Mac Mini, a slightly beefier Mac Mini that might get introduced sometime in June. But I can't, if it's introduced in June and I want a display, I might need to order the display now on the chance that it actually shows up by the time the computer arrives. So I had that moment where I was like, is this stupid? I was like, I guess I should hold off. But like, it would have one of those like, brain explosion moments of thinking like,
what if I get a Mac Mini and I don't have a display to pair with it? Then what do I do?
Oh yeah, I had this whole long thought process. Like, I guess I just boot up my iMac and full screen sharing into the Mac Mini sitting on the desk. I guess that seems weird. But yeah. I guess I could do it.
Well, I mean, the good thing is you can cancel your orders.
It's a good point. But what if I want it and then I don't? It's too much, Jason. I don't know. It's too many floating parts.
I get it.
But we're getting closer to that, the point where hopefully I'll have a little more information about that. Yeah, the legacy nodes.
I've enjoyed my transition to Apple Silicon. It's nice.
Every time something on the Intel iMac fails or takes longer than I feel like it should, I swear a little bit inside and think, why haven't I replaced this with a better computer? The other day I had to export some podcast files and just bouncing stuff in Logic. It's usually not too bad, but if I run some of those Isotope plugins, like the voice enhancers, and it slows to a crawl.
Dan, I'm gonna cause you more trouble, although maybe this came up on the Rebound. I'm gonna cause you more trouble. You have an M1 MacBook Air, right?
I do.
So just order the monitor then.
I know, but I literally don't have a spot to put it.
Well, where the iMac is.
I know, but then I have to get all the stuff off the iMac and like put it somewhere, and
you can put the iMac in a closet, just screen share to it.
Oh my god!
I'm just saying, you already have an M1. I know, Mac, so you could have an Apple Silicon with an external display if you wanted to.
It's very
and
true.
It would probably be faster than your iMac for most.
That
things.
Is sobering to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That was how I felt. Hey, I had a $5,000 at purchase time iMac Pro, and I got a $999 MacBook Air, and it was faster in most, but not all, but most dimensions from the iMac Pro. Only that Isotope stuff and video encoding at like a really, really, really high level was still faster, but even then, not as much faster as I would have liked.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just saying. It's nice.
It's gonna happen. I feel good about it.
Let's see what else I did. One of the things I did sort of unexpectedly this week, I was actually out running, and I got a call from somebody at Apple PR saying, "Just want to let you know we got a firmware update coming out for the Studio display." I'm like, "Oh boy." Which required me to install a beta on this Mac, and the beta broke shortcuts, so that was really great. I'm so glad I did that. But at least I got to do the video where I tried to compare like before and after, and it was very much like you be the judge. I did a live thing with Zoom, and then I went back and I did QuickTime recording and uploaded that at a high resolution so people could really kind of dig into it. It's like, you be the judge. Is it better? Yeah, a little bit. Is it a magical solution? I mean, I could have told you when Apple said no, firmware update, that it wasn't going to be a magical solution because it's the same hardware. But they, you know, they're trying. We'll see if there's more to come. I think that they did the smart thing. It looks like it's just cropped a little bit less aggressively, which is probably good because you got more pixels and you've got a little more. But several people pointed out that it feels like they could do better here. Like, the white balance is kind of weird and the contrast is kind of weird. And, you know, even just taking sample images and running them through a filter, you can make them look a lot better. So the question is sort of like, is the A13 on this display just not capable of that level of processing?
I can't believe that based on, you know, yeah. an iPhone that's got an A13 chip in it.
And I would throw it further and say a lot of these computers attached to this display are powerful enough that maybe you should just stream the camera down to the computer and let the computer do the work. That's got all those cores, all that power in a lot of these computers that are attached anyway. I don't know. It's weird. I think a lot of it is contextual. I have a theory, which is that webcams are a thing, that they are bad, especially on Apple products. They are bad. And people, when you focus on them, you realize how bad they are. But the truth is, day to day, when you're just using them in a Zoom call, nobody notices and nobody cares. It's like I definitely feel there's an aspect of that, which is your mistake was looking directly into the webcam. Right? Like, it's like if you had not looked directly into it, if it was always just a thing that happened, you would be better off. But if there's a positive thing to come out of this, I think maybe Apple and the people behind Apple's products have learned a little lesson about how bad their reputation is in terms of the quality of their webcams, because none of them are as good as they should be.
Yeah, and it feels like a redux a little bit of the butterfly keyboard situation, where 100%. You've got to think Apple is sitting there thinking, we made this amazing monitor and all people can talk about is the webcam, yeah. right? Well, they're kind of like, I'm sure, like slapping their heads a little bit over there, going like, why are we taking all this flack?
And it's actually like the butterfly keyboard in another way, which is the butterfly keyboard was a clever piece of technology that they built in order to get it as ultra thin as possible for the 12-inch MacBook. And then they got so proud of their technological prowess that they said, let's put it in everything, even when the context is different and it might not be the best choice. And that's literally what happened with the center stage camera, is they're so proud of center stage on the iPad especially, and they're like, let's just put that camera everywhere. And it seems, based on the reaction people have had, that a standalone desktop display is probably not going to benefit from center stage at the level that an iPad is. And the trade-off is maybe not the same, but Apple has sort of rushed headlong into it because they're so proud of their center stage camera that they didn't really consider. And that's, I do believe that's the story with the Magic or the butterfly keyboard as well, is they thought it was so awesome that they put it in everything. It's like, you don't need to put it in anything else but the MacBook, but it was too late.
The issue was that it was also fundamentally breaking a lot, which is not great either.
It was, but that would have been less of an issue if it had been constrained to one thing that had to have the special keyboard because it was small. But instead, they decided to import it everywhere, and it turned out there were all sorts of other issues with it too.
Exactly.
I would argue it was a bad keyboard for two reasons. Right. One is that it was unreliable, and two was that it was it was a bad keyboard.
Right. Yes.
With no key travel for no reason.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of those you can do something about. But yeah, you know. So I wonder if this will impact. It's not going to make any immediate changes, I think. I think there's a couple ways this could go. One, they could basically ignore it from now on out and just hope that it goes away, which is a very Apple solution to these things.
And when they come out with their new fancier standalone display they're going to be like, if you want the best
ever.
Yeah. You can get the best, yeah.
I would really like them to see them, address this in a way that I think lots of people have talked about, which is why are there no controls for this? Like, either provide some ways to tweak the image built into the OS, or just make an API to allow some third-party, developers to do this.
Biggest thing, there was a tweet that I replied, I think, to James Thompson, and I thought it was actually the best comment that I made the whole week, which was, maybe there should be a settings panel, because, like, anybody who's, like, I used webcam settings for a long time, which let you do this, it's like, maybe Apple again should do, I mean, there is the like turn center stage on or off, but that's it. Like, what if I wanted to set a custom crop non-center stage? We should be able to do that. Why is that set to one crop in firmware? And the firmware changed, so the crop changed. But like, why can't I set that? Why can't I make things a little bit brighter or a little bit less saturated? Because I did that all the time in webcam settings, and it helped. I think James Thompson's sample image would have been better if he had had a little slider to say, can I increase the contrast a little bit? Mine would have been better if I could have decreased the saturation a little bit. But Apple's like, no. It's all magic. It's like, yeah, but it's a bad magic trick. Like, I get that you want it to be good by default, but there's no shame in saying, I want to control, I know my environment and I know what I want my webcam to look like. Why don't you let me do it? And this goes for literally every Apple product that has a webcam in it, right? It's not just this display. It's literally, certainly the Macs, but you could argue that the iPhone and iPad could use it too. It's like, maybe give me some control if I want to customize this, and they just don't want to do it. I don't know. Maybe it has to do with the image pipeline that they're like, nope. There's just one kind of set of output, but I would argue maybe that's not great either, right? Maybe let me tweak it a little bit, because that was very helpful with something like the Logitech webcam that I used, and I could use webcam settings to make it better. Mike Hurley's complaint about how it doesn't sync to the refresh rate. It's basically the electrical mains in the UK. And so you get a flicker, and then it now there's a firmware update where it adjusts. And this is like on the M1 iMac, where it adjusts and it kind of figures it out. But you know what would also work is a button where you could set the refresh rate to match the light flicker. And webcam settings, I believe, had that. And the Logitech settings app had that. But Apple's like, no. We'll just do it automatically, except sometimes it doesn't work and you'll have to quit and relaunch in order to get it to work. It's like, well, why not let the user have a button and say, I'm in the UK. Just keep it like this all the time. But no, they don't.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
It's very Apple. It is. There's one way to do this. And like, I have a piece, forget it.
And if you don't like it, forget it.
Yeah. I have a piece coming in Macworld on Monday, but one of the things I kind of joke about in the beginning, which is, you know, the Apple is stubborn, and so much of this seems, at the very least, to have derived from maybe Steve Jobs' influence in the earliest days in terms of the culture, where there's two ways to do things. There's the Apple way and the wrong way. And I think that continues to be true. It has, occasionally they have lightened up, and that's kind of what the piece is about, which is like, yeah, even Apple will realize sometimes they need to make corrections to the way they've been doing things. But still, it's kind of more the exception to the rule. And like in so many cases, this is going to be Apple putting out the idea that everything is fine. People love this energy. I guarantee you that at some point there will be Tim Cook or somebody will be talking about, like, response to the center stage camera has been amazing, you know, like with so many users who love it. And everyone will be just sitting there in the audience gritting their teeth thinking, yeah, which users?
What else?
What else indeed? I don't know. There hasn't... Unless you want to touch the third rail of tech stories this week.
Nope.
Then we'll just leave that aside.
You can hear my opinions about that and Upgrade Plus if you're a paid Upgrade member, and otherwise you can't hear it. That's it.
We talked a little bit on the rebound this week, too. So.
Nope. I did a story on Macworld this week about the biggest moments in the history of the iPad.
Oh, the iPad.
I just World for device fun, called the iPad. Just for fun. And what I put at my number one, and I know that this is a weird one, and I'm kind of trying to be, you know, shifty about it, but I put that Chicago iPad event as number one. And the reason I did is because I felt like it was the moment where Apple kind of got its act together in terms of sort of setting up the whole product line, and it brought the pencil all the way down to the base model. And, you know, they had gone through that period where the iPad had kind of been confused and it wasn't selling very well. And they're like, what are the different, there was an Air and a Pro and all of that. And then they brought back the low-end iPad. And as counterintuitive as it is to say that March event, I feel like it was good in the sense that it was almost like emblematic of the moment where they're like, oh, we figured out the iPad a lot more than we did before. And my other choices are fairly are more obvious, right? The introduction of the Pencil and the iPad Pro in 2015, multitasking iOS 9 also in 2015. That was a big year for the iPad. The Magic Keyboard release, which included the pointer and all that. And then at number five, just because I want to kind of dig a little bit, it was the introduction of the M1 iPad Pro, because it made us all say, all right, Apple, it's literally the same now hardware as on the Mac. Where's the software? And there's no answer.
Yep. Well, yeah. And the things haven't changed much, unfortunately.
No. Well, it's the real moment that I had was realizing that it was 7 years ago when Apple did multitasking and the iPad Pro and the Pencil. It's like very That's important a long time. Step, and yet doesn't feel like the steps have there have been that many steps since then. So maybe
yeah,
this year.
They keep doing it. Yeah, they keep doing little stuff, and it's better than it's been. But it's still not as good as it could be.
I'd love to knock something off that list.
I enjoy my iPad Pro that I've had for probably a month now. I really like it. It's a great machine, but it ends up being a thing that is still very, for me, very siloed in terms of the things that I end up using it for. In terms of like the impetus to switching to another device at times is high, right? Like because like. Okay, I'll read my news on it in the morning now. I've started trying to do that instead of I used to just use my phone. But I'll like read something while I'm having my breakfast. But if I need to go do something that is more complex than, getting to a web page or, bring up a D&D character sheet, it's like, well, pull out the laptop. It just is. And it's sad because, like you said, it's the same processor. And they just haven't quite gotten there.
I like writing on the iPad, but there it is almost the reverse of that, where it's the great thing about it is that it's a little more focused because it is full screen and all that. But yeah, we'll see what they do. It's Friday. That means Friday Night Baseball, Dan. It's not just the day of the Six Color Secret podcast. It's Friday Night Baseball. My baseball team, the San Francisco Giants, will be playing a Friday night baseball game tonight. So I will get to suffer the indignity of being a fan of a team who has to listen to national announcers explain stories about the team that you already know. So that'll be great.
My thoughts are with you in this challenging time.
Yep. Yeah, it happens to all of us eventually. Eventually. So
eventually.
I'll get some quality time with that.
Looks like I would get that next week. The Sox are playing.
Yep.
Although I will be in a different time zone. So that's the East Coast game.
It means they play earlier.
That's right.
It's afternoon baseball out here on the West Coast. That's what it is.
It's always so strange.
They did, since I wrote my first critique of the Apple stuff, they have been tweaking the graphics. My favorite part is that they have this probability forecast, and it's like 45.23% chance of him reaching base. And I said, 45 would have done it. And then week two, it was to the 10th. And week three, it was just to the whole number. It's like they got there in the end. They figured it out.
I enjoy that they went to the 10th and were like, we can't just switch to an integer.
45.2 is so much different than 45. It's like it's really not. It's really not. This is going to be good enough. Just stick with it. And I also think those are not particularly illuminating statistics, but they have tried to switch it up. It's just one of those thoughts of like get somebody who cares about actual like interesting statistics to be in charge of your statistic display, please. Well, maybe
I hope you continue to use your lathe of heaven powers for good.
Please, yes, that's right. I have a very very particular superpower, which is the ability to determine how many significant figures are displayed in baseball statistics.
Everybody needs a hobby.
Yep. And I will. I wrote about it and did a little interview. I will recommend it to people if people like Wordle or crossword puzzles and they're looking for another sort of daily puzzle thing that hits a lot of the same notes as something like Wordle or a crossword puzzle. I recommend Not Words, which just came out yesterday, I think, and it's Zach Gage and Jack Schlesinger, and it is Zach Gage, and one of my favorite iOS developers. He's developed all sorts of cool stuff, like Really Bad Chess and Good Sudoku and TypeShift and Spell Tower.
What was the, he had the pool one?
Pocket Run Pool. Yeah, Zach, yeah. He tells me in the interview I did with him, he says basically he thought of, you know, it's this balance of like, well, could I just change the rules of a known game? And then it was sort of like, it turns out you could just subtly change the rules. Or in the case of Really Bad Chess, it's kind of just changing the beginning state of chess. And then it just plays out as chess. So the Not Words is fun because it's a crossword puzzle without clues. Instead, there are regions of the board that have letters in them. And you have to figure out which letters are the right letters. Like, you'll have five squares with five letters, but only one set of positions for those letters will solve the puzzle, right? Because you've got to build words, and a lot of the words are across multiple regions. So you end up in this situation where you're like, this is a five-letter word, and it's three letters out of these six letters, and it's two letters out of these five letters. And it's good. It's like a logic puzzle. It uses a lot of the same crossword puzzle solving parts of your brain, but you don't actually have to solve the clues about what the words are. Instead, it's just a matter of kind of figuring out what the words are, which is why it's sort of like, what if Wordle was it crossed with a crossword puzzle construction?
Jason, I do both Wordle and crossword puzzles every day, and I found this game infuriating. Like, it's good. I like it, but it is so much. My brain is not wired for this. Like, for some reason, crossing those two things. Like, I did one this morning, and it only, you know, it took me, I don't know, 6 or 7 minutes to do it. But I also did it, like, right after waking up, which is probably not the ideal time for me to try to do this. But it was just like wait, what is happening? Why do I need to arrange these letters? It's very clever, though, I will say. I'm looking forward to trying it again. I tried doing the... there's like a daily twist one that has something, and I cannot figure out. I have finished it, but it has not told me I'm done, and I cannot figure out what I've done.
So
wrong.
The twist, the way the twist puzzles work is there are multiple solutions to the twist puzzles, but only one that has the vowels in the right places, and it's got the numbers around the sides.
It tells me I have zeros on everything, and I filled out the grid, and it's not finished. I don't know what's happening.
I don't know. That's weird. That is weird. I'd say the puzzle length varies too, which is kind of funny. So like today's puzzle took me 9 minutes. Yesterday's puzzle took me 6 minutes. Tuesday's puzzle took me 3 minutes.
Does it get harder as the week goes on? Because that's the traditional crossword thing.
It does, but what Zach said in my interview is that it's a little bit more than just that. Let me see if I can find that part of the interview. He said, we take a bit of a clue from crosswords and have more of a stochastic difficulty throughout the week. Friday puzzles are less dense and more challenging. Saturday puzzles are large but filled with mostly smaller words than you would expect. So I did the Saturday puzzle in about 17 minutes. It took me 37 minutes to do the Sunday puzzle.
Oh, wow.
So it really varies. That was my worst one. I might have just had a bad day. But like Monday puzzle, this week the Monday puzzle took me 6 minutes, but last week it took me a minute. And the week before it took me a minute. So it really varies. But yes, that's the idea, is that there's sort of a rhythm and it builds during the week, which is also the case with Good Sudoku, which starts out super easy on Monday and then just gets awful by the end. It just gets miserable by the end. So anyway, it's free. And then there's an in-app purchase if you want to do there are like archives. You get all the back archives because there's one new puzzle a day. The twist puzzles are part of the unlock. And then there's extra like workbooks. They like the idea of like having a workbook. So there's like 30, you get 30 puzzles for a month. He said that some people, that's really motivating to like, I want to work my way through the workbook this month. And there's a mechanic for that some people like. They've definitely this is one of those games that they think a lot about how it works. I really liked it.
I can report I just did the Monday one, and it took me a minute.
And you were on a podcast.
And I was on a podcast, so I feel better about myself now.
Monday.
Diving in on Friday and feeling like this is really hard. Yeah,
I feel really bad about my Monday puzzle because I don't know what I was... I think I did it too early and my brain wasn't processing it, because the other two Monday puzzles I did in a minute, but 6 minutes, something really went wrong there.
You know what? It's just got to get that brain in the right gear sometimes.
You do. All right. Well, next week you are probably not going to be here because you're going to be traveling. I'll see if I can get a guest so I don't have to like call you on the phone from a remote location.
I'm going through a tunnel.
You'll see what it's like at 9 a.m. to do this podcast. Talk about getting your brain ready.
That's true.
But you won't be hungry for lunch.
That's true. I'll be hungry for breakfast.
For breakfast instead, yeah. All right, well, until the mysteries of next Friday, I guess. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.